Shyam Vishnu Prad Paramahamsa Prad Vidhacharya Ashto Tadasada Sri Sri Mad His Devanga Sisi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shita Pokwari Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrindaki Jai Iskam Bibiti Founder Charya Shita Prabhupada Ki Jai Nama Charya Shila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Iskam Guru Vrindaki Jai Prem Sakaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrindaki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shyamakun Radhakun Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Shri Vrindava Dhamma Ki Jai Shri Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Tulsi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Ganga Jamuna Maya Ki Jai Sankirtan Jagna Ki Jai Dihatmadanga Transcendental Book Distribution Ki Jai Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai The Transcendental Lordship Shri Shri Gornitaya Ki Jai Shri Shri Radhashyama Sundar Ki Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balarama Ki Jai Shri Shri Prahlad Nrisimha Ki Jai Gaur Premananda Samaveda Bhakta Vinda Ki Jai All glorious to the assembled devotees All glorious to the assembled devotees All glorious to the assembled devotees All glorious to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 23, Song of the Avanti Brahmana. Today we text 6 through 11, so I'll move pretty quickly through the... Maybe I'll do it verse by verse and make short comments. Avanti shu. Why don't we just? I'll do in unison. You know, just, is that all right? Okay. I didn't have it up there. Okay, so I'll just. I'll do a solo. Avanti shu dvija kaschid asid adyatmana shriya varta vritti. Kadaryastu kami lubdo ti kopana. In the country of Avanti, there once lived a certain Brahmin who was very rich and gifted with all opulences, and who was engaged in the occupation of commerce. But he was a miserly person, lusty, greedy, and very prone to anger. Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the Avanti country is the district of Malwa. This Brahmana was extremely wealthy, doing business in agriculture, banking, and so on. Being a miser, he suffered agony when his hard-earned wealth was lost, as will be described by the Lord himself. Om again Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umritam Gina Tajmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Yesterday, Tamahar gave a wonderful class. There's a principle that's enunciated in the fourth chapter, the third canto. This is the Dura. Wanting to meet with Uddhava, and then Uddhava redirects him to go to Maitreya. And when this, you know, Vidura understood the intimacy that Uddhava had with Krishna, and this is actually after this Uddhava Gita, that this took place just prior to the departure of Krishna. And Prabhupada in the purport describes an interesting phenomenon. It's called Maryada Vitikrama. Anybody know what that means?
Yes.
I know you know. Anybody else? You know? No? Okay, so it means to impertinently surpass or superior. Okay, so yesterday, Tamahar, through his the mercy of Wikipedia, found out that Malwa is in Punjab. Actually, there is a Malwa in Punjab, but the Malwa that's being described here is in western Madhya Pradesh and southeastern Rajasthan. And the actual city where the Avanti Brahmana came from, I just went a little more deep in the research and with Google and what have you. But the city is Ujjain. That's where the Avanti Brahmana came from. And actually, that's one of the reasons that Ujjain is considered a Tirtha, because of that pastime taking place there. There's other pastimes in Ujjain, as we know. But okay, so I hope I didn't do this impertinently, but you know, it's just kind of a side note, you know, for clarification. And let's see. So it's just confusing because there's two Mawal districts in different states. Now let's find out about the agony the Avanti Brahmana suffered. And hopefully that doesn't happen to us. Same kind of a deal. Are we up and running? So we're on now text 7. Brian? You're on 8. Okay, here we go. Yatayo titayastasya.
Yatayo titayastasya.
Van matrena pinarchita.
Van matrena pinarchita.
Sunya vasata atmapi.
Sunya vasata atmapi.
Kale kamar anarchita.
Kale kamar anarchita.
In his home, devoid of religiosity and lawful sense gratification, the family members and guests were never properly respected, even with words. He would not even allow sufficient gratification for his own body at the suitable times. Okay, so let's just go to 8. Yeah, okay. I'll just... Yeah, you just, there you go. Okay. Dushila sha kadarya sha.
Dushila sha kadarya sha.
Ruyante putra pandava.
Ruyante putra pandava.
Dara duhritaro britya. Ishana Nacharan Priyam. Since he was so hard-hearted and miserly, his sons, in-laws, wife, daughters, and servants began to feel inimical toward him. Being disgusted, they would never treat him with affection. Pretty popular guy. So this brings to mind, there's a description of how a demoniac person thinks, and this is in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Divine and Demoniac Natures is the title of the chapter. The demoniac person, he thinks, so much wealth I have today and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now and it will increase in the future more and more. Then there's a famous two-liner from, the thought processes of the demoniac personality is in 16, 13 through 15. And then there's a Ishvaroham aham bogi siddham balavan sukhi. So I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. Until it all crashes on him, you know, and this is what we're going to see here. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. So in text 16, thus perplexed by various anxieties and bound by a network of illusions, they become too strongly attached to sense gratification and fall down into hell. Okay, so then in the purport, it even goes further, you know, to describe, you know, this miserly tendency. The demoniac man knows no limit to his desire to accumulate money. That is unlimited. He thinks only of how much assessment he has just now and schemes to engage that stock of wealth further and further. For that reason, he does not hesitate to act in any sinful way and sell deals in the black market for illegal gratification. He's enamored by the possessions he has already, and he's always planning to improve them. Okay, so here's an interesting point about a demoniac person. He believes in the strength of his personal work, not in the law of karma. According to the law, but he will find out, a lot of times there's an awakening when, you know, the midlife crisis comes and all of his starts getting reactions for his sinful activities. A demoniac person believes in the strength of his personal work, not in the law of karma. According to the law of karma, a man takes his birth in a high family or becomes rich or well-educated or very beautiful because of good work in the past. The demoniac thinks that these things are accidental due to the strength of one's personal ability. They do not sense any arrangement behind all the varieties of people, beauty, and education. So then, this describes the enmity that starts taking place between the maniac personalities. It's kind of connected with this miserliness. Anyone who comes into competition with such a demoniac man is his enemy. Does anybody have any enemies here? No, of course not. There are many demoniac people, and each is enemy to the others. The enmity becomes more and more deep between persons, then between families, then between societies, and at last between nations. Therefore, there's constant strife, war, and enmity all over the world. Yesterday, Tamahar quoted a statistic that in the last century, 200 million people, or over 200 million people, have been killed in wars. That's a lot of enmity expressed through that statistic. Okay. So let's not let it happen to us. Okay, so text 9. You there? Okay, we're there. Tashaivam yaksha vittasha. Chutasyo baya. Lokata, dharma kama vihinasya, chukrudu pancha bhagina. In this way, the presiding deities of the five family sacrifices became angry at the brahmana, who, being niggardly, guarded his wealth like a yaksha, who had no good destination either in this world or the next, and who was totally deprived of religiosity and sense enjoyment. Here's from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this. The yaksha's only business is to accumulate and protect wealth. They do not utilize it either for themselves or for others. It's an interesting kind of mindset. Usually there's a lot of sense enjoyment with wealth. It goes with the package. That's why most people get it. But this is a unique brand of demoniac consciousness. The five types of living entities, this is continuing with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, the five types of living entities who deserve a share of sacrificial offerings are the demigods, sages, forefathers, human beings, and lower classes of beings. When they are deprived of their share, they become angry at a householder. So in the next verse, we'll see that he actually lost everything because of this behavior. So this brings up another point about the law of karma. I found a very succinct description of how it works. This is from 13th chapter of the first canto, 43rd purport. The Supreme Lord is present as a localized paramatma in the heart of every living being, as it is said in the Bhagavad Gita 13:23. And therefore he knows everything of our activities at every stage of our lives, and we could add in their lives, or, you know, multiple lives, our lives, but our personal lives going back many generations. He rewards the reactions of our actions by placing us in some particular place, birth in a particular family. So I looked all over Prabhupada's books. I even asked Pran Govinda, what are these five types of sacrifices? I did find the Pancha Yajna, which is also called the Pancha Maha Yajna, also the Pancha Shuna. But it seems like it's a little different thing, because in those descriptions, it emphasizes that mainly, we just walk down the sidewalk, go into the parking lot, we step on a few ants, okay? So there's a reaction to that. We drink a glass of water, there's some germs in that water. What the presiding deities are, it's not so clear, but so the big question, it's an obvious question, why didn't Prabhupada put much emphasis on this? Anybody got an answer? Why did he not? Yes, Sri Devi? Say it one more time, a little bit louder for old men. Something about the Maha Mantra, but I didn't hear the first two words. Oh, yeah, right. Well, that's basically the point. You know, but also this is Karmakanda, and we don't so much deal with that. You know, I mean, it is presented in different places. We went through a section a couple chapters ago in the 11th canto. It's presented in the Bhagavad Gita. But it's not something that we do, and that's why, you know, it's kind of like, and particularly in this age, not so qualified to do these type of things. So there was, you know, in the 20th chapter of this canto, there's a verse that describes, as long as one is not satiated by fruit of activities and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by hearing and chanting about the Supreme Lord, one has to act according to the regulative principles of the Vedic injunction. This is like the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. So it's kind of like that, you know, and so to counteract. There's also other ways to achieve it. Like you said, we chant Hare Krishna. And there's a nice verse earlier on in the canto, Devarshi Bhutapta Ninam Pritinam Nakinkaro Nayam Rinicha Rajan Sarvatmana Ya Sharanam Sharanyam Katomakundam Parahityakartam. So one who's given up material duties and he's taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Mukunda, the giver of liberation, he's not not indebted to the demigods. Doesn't have any debt to them. Doesn't have any debt to the great sages, ordinary living beings, relatives, friends, mankind, or even one's forefathers who's passed away. Because each of these entities are part and parcels of the Supreme Lord. So he doesn't need to serve them separately. There's in a purport, the disciples, this comes from the fifth chapter of the 11th canto. The purporting is done by the disciples of Prabhupada. And they cite this really famous verse, Yata taror mula nishtechanena tripyanti ta skanda bajopatrat vishaka panohar raksha yatendriyanam tatayava sarvahanam achuteja. So it's just like if you pour water on the root of the tree, automatically the leaves, the twigs, the branches, they all get watered. And if we put food into our stomach by going through the mouth, then all the limbs and senses are nourished automatically. So similarly, just by worshiping the Lord, then all of these other entities are satisfied. There's no need to do any specific yajna for them. And since Krishna is the ultimate beneficiary of all austerities, we go directly to him, and then we don't have to do these other things. Does that make sense? There's an analogy given that, you know, just as, let us say that I'm working for the county of Alachua, you know, as in social services, and but then I get a position with the Social Security Administration, you know, as the assistant to the director of the Social Security Administration. I don't have to worry about serving, you know, the local county. You know, I'm way up there. You know, I'm not that a devotee has a puffed up mentality, but because he's going to the source of everything, Krishna, we don't have to deal with that. Now, just because we're, you know, in a special situation, engaged in devotional service, doesn't mean that we have to act like the Avanti Brahmana did in his dealings, you know, and that we get away with it. No, there's other ways that kind of help us. You know, if we make an offense, there's reactions, and they're actually even heavier, particularly if we offend a Vaishnava. So there's another principle that's at play here, and this is described by Lord Brahma in the Brahma Samhita. Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajan. That when one takes up devotional service, he's not under the laws of karma anymore. They're already completely burned up by just bhakti, you know, these sinful reactions. Okay, so let's move on to 10. Is it up there? Yeah? Okay. Tad avadhyana vishrashta. Punyaskandasya burida. Artopi akachan nidanam. Bhavasya parishramaha. O magnanimous Uddhava, by his neglect of these demigods, he depleted his stock of piety and all his wealth. The accumulation of his repeated exhaustive endeavors was totally lost. Purport. The Brahmana's stock of piety became like a withered branch that no longer gives fruits or flowers. Srila Jiva Goswami comments that the Brahman had a trace of piety directed at the Supreme Lord with hopes of liberation. That pure portion of the branch of his piety remained unwithered, eventually giving the fruit of knowledge. It kind of resonates with me because I was so impious before I became a devotee, but in general. But I got a book, and it just like was amazing, you know, how it planted that seed in the midst of all of this impiety, and gradually I could see that it was the king of knowledge, and I could see that my life started changing. And actually, the year before I joined, every day, I would pray to God to direct me to my guru. And then, this incredible series of events. You know, again, Krishna led me to a book distributor in Port Authority bus terminal. And that was the answer to my prayers. But it was very clear. And even before that, even before I got the book, 4 years before I joined, about 7 years before, I was just walking down a street in New York City, and a devotee came up to me and tried to shove a Back to Godhead magazine down my throat. And it kind of turned me off, but it really stuck in my mind. I was just, Lindori was telling me his pastime of taking up Krishna consciousness. And when he was a little boy, he was in New York, and he saw the Rath Yatra parade. He saw Lord Jagannath. And like 40 years later, gosh, you know, he couldn't get it out of his mind, you know, and then things started changing in his life. So, all glories to Bhadra and Dharmaraj Prabhus, you know, for doing the big jagya for so many years, because it will bear fruit. So there's, who knows what kind of pious activity that didn't wither as a result of his misbehavior. But there's actually in Madhya 22, this is Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanat Goswami, in a purport, Prabhupada delineates three kinds of sukritis, pious activities. Anybody know what they are? No? Okay, so there's one that leads to bhakti that's called unmukya. Let's see, how's it pronounced again? Bhakti unmukhi sukriti. That's pious activity that leads to bhakti, like getting a king of knowledge, that would lead to it, putting a donation in the box, seeing devotees on Hari Nam. Those would be examples, you know, and being attracted. Even way before that, way back in 1970, I went to New York to visit my brother. He was going to Harvard Divinity School, and we passed by, you know, I had a beard down to here, and a ponytail down the middle of my back, and, you know, we passed by some Hare Krishnas doing Hare Nam, you know, in one park, and my brother kind of made a little negative comment. He said, God, those are the Hare Krishnas, they're kind of spaced out, you know, something like that. He would eat his words now, I'm sure, but because he's seen the benefit. But I thought, God, they look pretty good. They look pretty cool. You know, maybe I should do something like that someday. And then, sure enough, so that was actually, you know, that's probably when the seed was first planted. Then I got a few more sukritis that came my way over the years, and then. Okay, so then there's Bhagan Mukhi Sukriti. Anybody guess what that leads to? Bhagan Mukhi Sukriti. I'll give you a hint. It has to do with what happened with the Avanti Brahmana. He got the, in Bengali say, Taka Lugbe, and he got it. So that was, you know, that's what happens with Bhagan Mukhi Sukriti. We get material opulence, we get big house, fame, you know, followers. Okay, so then there's one other sukriti, Mokshan Mukhi Sukriti. Anybody guess what that stands for? That's right, liberation. But it's not specifically Vaishnava liberation, unfortunately. And Prabhupada comments that other than Bhaktan Mukhi Sukriti, the other two sukritis really don't have much value. We don't really want them so much, you know. It actually can be an impediment to our devotional service. What's that? Queen Kunti Janmaishraya Shruta Shribir Edamana Madhapuman Mevarhatya Bidaktum Vayatvama Kinchana Gocharam. So one who's on a path of material progress trying to improve himself with high birth, great wealth, high education, or bodily beauty, he can't approach you with sincere feeling. It's Edamana, Madhapumana. There's an intoxication that takes place, you know, as a result of material well-being. And we kind of become a little puffed up. And you look at, you know, most of us, we go through, I'm saying that, I mean, there's statistical evidence for that, at least in India. The Pune Temple analyzed, you know, how many people joined and what their reasons were. They do a seminar. This is their main recruiting device. What's it called? Discover Yourself, I think is what it's called. It's a 6-day seminar. And they do it in the first 3 weeks of the school year at major universities, the Indian Institutes of Technology, and they have enormous results. There's an X number that take up devotional service. It's something like 15% of those that actually attend it. They get them early. They get them in the first 3 weeks, because if they wait, then they get absorbed in impious activities, and it's, forget it. You know, you can't even talk to the guys, you know, because there's, even in India, you know, the blessings of the West have come. You know, I mean, the blessings of Kali Yuga have come in quite strongly. And so they get absorbed in all the nonsense that are accustomed, that college students are accustomed to get into, even in America, believe it or not. So, and then there's like, of those that take up devotional service, there's something like 20% that become brahmacharis. And, but every single, practically, I think it's 95% of everyone that takes up devotional service, they take it up because they're undergoing some distresses in their life. So it seems like it goes with the package, at least in Kali Yuga. You know, it gives us something to cry to the holy name about, and you know, start examining our lives. What you know, just like, this is what the Avanti Brahmana. Oh my God, everything's taken away. What a suffering condition. And then, you know, then he goes through all these different abuses at the hands of impious people. But someone left their pin in here, and I just got stuck. Maybe that's some kind of a sign for Krishna to get moving here. Maybe the surrender is that being so puffed up. So, Brahmanda Brahmate Kona Bhagavanji Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Beach. So the Bhaktian Mukhi Sukriti, it leads us to this fortunate position of being able to take shelter, get the mercy of a spiritual master and of Krishna. I mean, we may be wandering throughout the universe, but if we get this Bhaktian Mukhi Sukriti, then we can do it. And we'll see, there's, you know, just, it's very unusual, you know, how, you know, you distribute books to many, many different personalities, but like once a week, maybe once every day, you'll meet someone that's genuinely interested, depending upon how good you chant your rounds, probably, you know, Krishna will send the right people. I had this happen to me. One time I was second, about a year and a half in the movement, and I was out on book distribution. We had four saffron-colored Dodge vans that linked up with a saffron-colored Barth motorhome. And Ramapad Das Brahmachari, who was the temple president in New York, came out to visit us. You know, so we had the morning, we would all take our morning ablutions with two gallon milk jugs, and we'd fill one up. This was for soaping up. And the other gallon jug was for rinsing off. This was the standard. And we had all of our possessions in a BTG box. And anyway, it was very exciting. And Ramapad Swami, he came out. We had Mangal Aarti. And in the Barth motorhome, there was this, right within the living room, we had the deity pictures, photographs, on the engine cover, dashboard. And then the cook was cooking the breakfast, because there was, like, each van, we had three per van, so there was about 15 devotees total. And so then we chanted japa together, then we had guru puja, and then bhagavatam class. And it was, I don't remember which verse, but it was from the second chapter of the first canto. And Ramapad Swami, somehow they started going off and talking about the importance of japa. And He indicated that he had observed several types of japa during the japa period, and he demonstrated it. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Dai Brahma japa, and then radar japa, watching a cook, and other forms of inattentive japa. And so anyway, I walked out of the class realizing that I was not very good at chanting japa. You know, I had a lot of room to improve. And so the next morning, We all got up super early. I think it was 2 o'clock was the standard, if I'm not mistaken. It might have been a little later in traveling Sankirtan, but we get up, get the bucket showers, get dressed up, and then, you know, I was chanting japa. You could probably hear me, you know, down at Jaini Thai's house if I would chant from here. I would chant, because you got to chant louder than mine, but it was the best rounds, you know, my 1.5 years. But what was remarkable, but it wasn't that I was doing it fruitively, I was just trying to follow the formula. And but what really amazed me was when I got out of book distribution, every single person I met was like the best person I'd meet in a week. It was incredible. How many good people, and they were reaching for their wallets before I'd even ask them for a donation. You know, that was really impressive, you know, the power of the holy name. We'll get more on the holy name later on, if I have time. Okay, so let's move ahead. Text 11. Are we up there? Way to go, Pran. Gatayo jagrihu kinchit. Kinchit dasyava udava. Daivata kalata kinchit. Brahma bandor mi partivat. Some of the wealth of this so-called Brahmana was taken away by his relatives, my dear Uddhava, some by thieves, some by the whims of providence, some by the effects of time, some by ordinary men, and some by government authorities. Purport. It appears that even though the so-called Brahmana was determined not to spend this money, his wife and other relatives managed to squeeze out a portion. According to Srila Siddharaswami, providence here refers to fires in the home and other types of occasional misfortunes. Effects of time here refers to the destruction of agricultural crops through seasonal irregularities and other such occurrences. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura points out that one should not merely proclaim oneself to be a Brahmana, but should actually understand one's original identity as a servant of the Lord. One declaring himself to be a Brahmana but maintaining the materialistic mentality is not a real Brahmana, but rather a Brahma Bandhu, or so-called Brahmana. The humble devotees of Lord Vishnu, following the indications of the Vedic scriptures, refer to themselves as unfortunate, unable to understand the kingdoms of God. They do not proudly proclaim themselves to be Brahmanas. Those who are wise, however, know that such humble devotees are actually Brahmanas whose hearts are cleansed by the pure mode of goodness. So, I think if we reflect on what's being said here by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, not that one should be a Brahman in name only, does anybody here feel that this might be a problem within our movement, that sometimes someone takes brahminical initiation but doesn't really manifest brahminical qualities? In particular, the main brahminical quality here is to actually understand one's original identity as a servant of the Lord. Does that maybe an issue within our movement? Sometimes, I'm not trying to induce Vaishnava Aparad, but just something, you know, that you could think about. You know, maybe it is something that we have to be concerned about. And what is the way that one, I mean, most of us, there's a few exceptions here, most of us are born in Malecha families, and we don't have any qualification by birthright. So how does one develop the genuine qualities of a Brahmin? There's an interesting verse that answers this question from the Bhaktisandarbha, and also Sanat Goswami and Hari Bhakti Vilas also quotes it there. Who quotes it first, I'm not really sure. Ita kanchanatam yati kamsyam rasa vidanata tata diksha vidanena vijatam jayatrenanam. So, is everybody familiar with alchemy? Okay, so by the alchemical process, one can mix bell metal with mercury and come out with gold. So similarly, by the process of diksha, by diksha, one can acquire brahminical qualities. Okay, so once in my devotional career, I made some comments that diksha is not a one-time event, it's actually a process. And of course that's confirmed, it is confirmed. And I made this comment, and I got in a lot of trouble with it. I kind of got a little banned from giving classes. This is supported actually in a purport under text 5 of Nectar of Instruction. Prabhupada says the process, again, process, by which a devotee becomes attached to Krishna is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Diksha kale bhakta kare atma samarpana. Se kale Krishna tare kare atma sama. At the time of initiation, when a devotee fully surrenders to the service of the Lord, Krishna accepts him to be as good as himself. Then Prabhupada goes on, diksha or spiritual initiation is explained in the Bhakti Sandarbha by Jiva Goswami. Divyam gyanam yato dadyat kuryat prapasya sankasyam. Tajmat diksheti saprukta dikshikaish tatvakovitai. By diksha, one gradually, now gradually implies a process, becomes disinterested in material enjoyment and gradually becomes interested in spiritual life. Okay, so it's a process. I mean, that's confirmed by devotees of the stature of Paladananda Swami, Burijan, Giriraj Swami. So it's a process. I mean, I accept it. It's a big part of the process when we make the commitment before the deities to the spiritual master that I'm going to follow the four regulative principles and chant 16 rounds a day. That's a big part of that commitment because we're given our word. If we make a promise to God, to Krishna, and we break it, I mean, God, what kind of, where's that going? You know, I mean, it's a pretty significant part of it, but it also, it's a lifetime commitment. It's not just a one-shot deal, and we can see that. Once there are 4,800 devotees that took diksha from Srila Prabhupada, and according to Mahamaya, got stabbed again. Yeah, here it is, right there. Okay, so according to Mahamaya, there's only about 800 that are still active within our movement. And I think, you know, I mean, I took initiation with, I think it was 18 devotees, and I think I'm the only one that's still active. One left his body. But, you know, so it's not, you know, there's something to this, you know, that it's actually a whole process. Now, how can we most effectively come to the point of realizing that we're eternal servants of Krishna? How does it happen? We can go to, we go and sit in the fire jagya, we make the promise, do the vows, chant around, do some service, you know, get married, get involved in all the grihastha activities. You know, how do we assure that we actually have come developed brahminical qualities? Now, I think we could kind of boil it down. Sri Devi made a really good point. But there's a verse, this is, I think it's 22nd chapter, if I'm not mistaken, of Madhya Leela. Yep, 22nd chapter. Smarta vyasaratam vishnur, vishmarta vyo najatuchit. Sarve vidhi nisheda shur etayor eva kinkura. So one should always remember Krishna and never forget him. And all the rules and regulations in Shastra, and coming from the spiritual master, should be servants of these two principles. Okay, so then Prabhupada makes a very interesting point in the purport. He said that if one wants to remember Krishna and never forget him, then that's chanting 16 rounds, that's what it does. And then he says that of all the instructions of the spiritual master, the chanting of 16 rounds is the most essential. So, but then even with that, we see that, you know, you just think of, maybe I can think of my own life, I can think of the lives of others that I took initiation with, or I've seen, you know, have taken initiation, and sometimes it doesn't seem like they're really, they chant for a while, but then something happens. So that, to a large extent, depends upon the quality and the feeling. Like Pran Govinda Prabhu was making a point about that, what did you say about the offering of some kind of a donation or service for Janmashtami? It should come from the heart. It's an offering. But this is a big part of the process of bhakti. Like, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said that japa is not lip deep, it's heart deep. So in other words, it's the feeling from the heart that we approach japa with. Just like Prabhupada in his famous Hare Krishna address, he spoke about that this is the, like the cry of a child for his mother. What? We have kids at our house all the time. You know, my wife's, she babysits. We got a 1.5-year-old, and we got a 3.5-year-old. And man, I mean, she kind of like this surrogate mama, you know. So when they fall down and they get an owie, it's, you know, super from the heart. So that kind of heartfelt mood, but how to do that? You know, how do you control the mind? This is a question that was asked to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, what's the question of the mind? You chant with the lips and hear with the ears. But that means somehow or other we get out of the mind. How many people are out of their minds? Could you please raise your hand? You're not going to admit to it, huh? Okay, so I try to be out of my mind when I chant. And that's a little clever way of saying I try to be in my heart. You know, this is the formula that the acharyas have given us. We can realize, you know, in Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's a description of how to realize that Krishna and Krishna's name are non-different. And the formula is that you cry to the holy name. And so there's a feeling, oh Krishna, I want to love you. I've turned my back on you. Please let me serve you purely. Please be pleased by my chanting. I'm struggling. You know, please, I'm doing this to please you. Please let me do a service that will please you. And, you know, so it's this cry, you know, this, you know, on your knees, you know, just chanting very intensely to, and really what it is. What are we asking for? We're asking for pure devotion. I'm not coming to you. It's an offense to the holy name to approach the holy name to satisfy our material desires. And we can't chant, okay, I'm going on Sankirtan today, I'm going to chant super good rounds so I can distribute a lot of books so I'll get glorified. That's not what we do, but we're chanting really good rounds so we can go out on book distribution, distribute a lot of books to help people come to Krishna consciousness, to please Prabhupada, to please Krishna. So the whole idea is not to please ourselves, which is material consciousness. This is the challenge that the Avanti Brahmana got into. He got into pleasing himself by getting as much taka lugbe, you know, got as much money as, you know what taka lugbe means, Pran Govinda? I know that Shigarangi knows from your husband, right? Takalogpa, you know? It means give me money. I want money. Okay? Yeah, I want it. Give it to him right away. And then you move your fingers like this Takalogpa, okay? And then the message is sent pretty clearly. So we don't approach the holy name for material self-aggrandizement. We approach the holy name because we want to experience Krishna's love. And we can receive that love. He's in his holy name. We don't have to go in, okay, I got an agenda. You know, I want, you know, I want bliss. No, I want to just, you know, that I just want to receive your love. I don't want to achieve something. I just want to receive it. So that's one way. But we can just have this crying mood of I'm helpless. I need your help, Krishna. Please remove my anarthas from my heart that are blocking my ability to please you, my ability to perceive you, to understand that I'm your eternal servant. It's actually, you know, in Harinam Chintamani, I couldn't find it, and I asked Prabhupada before, but he didn't have time because he's working really hard these days. I couldn't find it, but I got it from a quote from Mahatma in one of his books, that the Krishna considers the holy name the greatest jewel in his treasure house. Well, why would that be? Because it fulfills one of his deepest desires to have each one of us give our hearts to him and love him. It's actually, he has a strong, I mean, to put it in the vernacular, Krishna jumps through hoops to bring us back to him. You know, so many facilities that he provided, Bhagavatam, he sends Srila Prabhupada to America. It puts us into difficulties. He put the Avanti Brahmana through so much. He put us through, still putting us through a lot. That's his love. He wants us to turn to him. So it's also the greatest jewel for us because it allows us, if we chant sincerely, it allows us to understand our identity. We can actually understand our sarup. We can go, you know, we can develop pure love for Krishna. So it's a powerful tool. We have to take it seriously. It's an amazing gift that Krishna has given us. So we should receive it with great gratitude and take it as the most important part of our day, this chanting. Okay. I've probably said enough or maybe too much, so we can stop here. Maybe there's some comments or questions. Or corrections, or whatever, reflections. Sri Devi.
So those other two sukritis that you mentioned, they're not sukriti, are they temporary?
The other sukritis, like Bhagavan Mukhi Sukriti and Moksha Mukhi Sukriti. Sri Devi is asking whether other than Bhakti and Mukhi Sukriti, whether the other two Sukritis are temporary. Yeah. We see that with the Avanti Brahmana. He blew it. He lost it. But there's, in Bhakti and Mukhi Sukriti is also referred to throughout Prabhupada's books as Agyata Sukriti. And in I think it's Bhagavad Gita 240. We don't have Madan Mohan here who connects each verse with a verse number. But Nehabikrama Nashosti Pratyavayo Navijite Swapamapyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahatmo Bayat. In this endeavor, there's no loss or diminution. Pratyavayo. We don't lose it. And so it continues. I mean, it might be that the Avanti Brahmana's Bhakti and Mukhi Sukriti was acquired in his previous life. But he also, in his previous life, made some very serious offenses. And then he got some piety. You know, so this is all part of the Lord's pastimes, you know, so he could demonstrate, you know, how to deal with insults. And, you know, how to have the lights turned on, you know, in this, in the midst of extreme distress. So the Bhaktiamukhi Sukriti is cumulative. And it also, you know, then we make a certain level of advancement. This is usually how that verse is referred to. Like, let us say I come to the platform of Ruchi in this lifetime. So that's where I start in the next lifetime. And I get an appropriate facility for doing that. I take birth in a Brahmin family who are strict Vaishnavas. Something like that, you know, and I'm just automatically attracted right from the very beginning of my life to chanting Hare Krishna. And there are examples of children in this community that are so well situated, you know, because of their previous Bhaktiamukhi Sukriti. Am I speaking the Siddhanta, Prem Govinda Prabhu?
Yes.
But I'm speaking in a little bit longer than I should. Oh, no. Okay. Say, okay, now we need the mic. Does the mic work? Prem Govinda is going to run over there and get in shape.
I just think you answered it, but so the other two Sukritis,
yeah,
they talked about, they just expire.
Well, just like you go to hell, you use up all the impious credits you get, and then you take an animal birth, and then you gradually work your way up, get a human birth. Unfortunately, most of the residents of the earthly planet in Kali Yuga are destined to hellish planets. And that's why there is such an impetus. I mean, our compassion can be there when we see the degraded condition that they're functioning in. You know, the slaughterhouses and the brothels and the pornography and, you know, the list goes on and on and on. You know, of the huge level of impiety that most people engage in. And so, naivo dvije paradratiya vaitaranya tvad virya gayana mahamintra magnachita so che tato vimukachitasa indriyarta maya sukaya varam udvahato vimudham. This is Plad Maharaj in his prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev. This describes pretty much the essence of Prabhupada's mood and mission. O best of the great personalities, I'm not at all afraid of material existence. For wherever I am, I'm fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and pastimes. Another translation Prabhupada gives in the purport of, in CC, is that I'm fully absorbed in the ecstasy of chanting your holy names. However, I am concerned with the suffering of those fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness, for maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. So, you know, this whole law of karma plays an enormous role in the reformation of the human being. You know, and because he has an option. Other species do not. He has an option to turn back to Krishna. And so our business is to provide the Bhaktiamukhi Sukriti to make it easy for him. And so I was having a discussion with devotees lately about, you know, how there's a lot of endeavor to do the Sunday program. And we have a lot of endeavor to go out and get people to come to the temple. But then when people come for the first time, the experiences a lot of them have had, and they've expressed this, if they come back again, that they're ignored, that they aren't really received warmly. So this is, I'm not saying this to be critical, but it's just it's something that's a phenomenon. We're so used to coming until we see our friends and then we give them a big bear hug and we chat about this and we that. And then people that are wallowing in the cesspool of material life and they've come here to get some relief, we ignore them. So this is something that it really has to be mobilized, you know, to address a very, very serious concern, because it's like lifetime after lifetime, people are going to be stuck. And where they can, I mean, how many of you would really like to have the inability to chant your rounds for the rest of your, to not chant your rounds for the rest of your life? How would you like to not be able to chant Hare Krishna ever again? Would anybody like that? I mean, how much, it has so much value in our lives. We feel so much satisfaction, so much happiness, so much bliss. This is an incredible gift that Prabhupada has given us. So, just, you know, that's part of the whole compassionate mood. We understand what we've gotten, the happiness, the freedom from incredible levels of suffering, and then naturally we want to allow others to experience that same thing.
Yeah, or just they give up on people, you know.
Say again?
We give up on people, you know, that, oh, they're not taking it to the degree that I would like to see them take up Krishna consciousness. They're not starting to chant, but they might like, you know, something about, but we give up on them, you know. Oh, like, okay, they're not going to take it up, but they will eventually. If we cultivate friendships with them, you know, they have some attraction.
That's the number one way that they're going to become attracted, if we develop friendship with them. And that's supported, oh, what's the verse? 2.